for them. We talk with them, not for them. And Dave and Ed have a nice website that's available. In Michigan, we have some how-to guides, some IPM checklists that are hopefully the district conservationists are using for a rapid reflection of what would be possibly appropriate in different situations. And then the really defined marriage would be when you get into direct planning assistance. Connecticut out there has an example where extension agents and extension folks do direct planning assistance with the programs. Conservation outcomes, I'm not aware of what kind of measurements are occurring at that level. But again, finally, particularly just related to direct planning assistance, when you get at that level, I would say that for partnership stability and making that really work, people should start thinking about what kind of cooperative agreement should occur. Connecticut is a fine example. California, there's another example of some web-facilitated pest management planning that occurs. Wisconsin, there's pest management training. And in Pennsylvania, there's guidance and planning as well. So where we are now versus where we were at before. And still excellent. The top graph is where we were at before. And just note, now the bottom graph is where we are at now, and I'll explain what these two circles mean. In 05 and 06, the average is now of the amount of dollars 2.8% from 0.77. The top 10 states are contributing budget in the general area pest management 9.2% below, before it was 2.8. The number of states that were the funding basis for pest management was less, it's less than 1%. It's now 19, before it was 37. Progress, I think, and again, if I were to put up that list of things occurring in Michigan, really nice things. I take some pride at that. I don't know if you know, guys know Michigan and Spartan Country, that's the state. We now turn green, is what I say. We are in the top 10 states. 7.5% of the budget goes to IPM. Through grower cooperation, we know that list of things that are being implemented. Why I circled that state is not just proud of where I'm from, is that we've been able to tap into a grower set, specialty crop growers, that through surveys of them, they were a bit previously, were a little resistant from the program, only because they're not farm bill activity type folks. But they've really grasped the concept. Where some of those other activities for specialty crop growers has occurred is in the Mid-Atlantic states as well. Connecticut comes to mind and New Jersey comes to mind, has done, and I believe Massachusetts as well, has had some really high increases in percentages. You would note that some increases in Middle America, that 10% level, I believe that's some really big field crop type activities that are occurring as well too. We still have the challenges related to IPM implementation. Our trajectory is going the right way to bolster that partnership. We're working together, and there's plenty of opportunities to do more. I want to say, just reiterate, you start with analysis, know what your potential partners like, know where they're going, what kind of cookies you could bake with them, so to speak. Engage, propose, do some activities in these three areas, and I think we have an opportunity to heft up our ability to look at our long-term goal in the future through this short-term mechanism of engaging in these conservation programs. It's all about working together, analyze, engage, propose, marriage, and I think it's really will resonate with growers. Love to hear a common message between these different agencies that growers are interacting. It just sings with them. It resonates. And that's all I have for here. I'd be glad to take a question, if there's any. Anything at all? This is pretty cool. Yes, sir. Mark, would you like to give that one a stab?
Each state handles it slightly differently. In the state of California, the directory of all the local work group meetings, as well as the state technical advisory committees, is posted to the web. I suspect other states handle it mostly the same, and maybe more direct contact. contact the state office of the RTS to know how best to connect.
And it's really easy to Google the individual state NRCS offices. Just punch in NRCS and then the state name, and it will pop straight up.
In Pennsylvania, get on the list, but the email you need or need email list.
But I would suggest you don't walk into one of those meetings cold, even if they're announced. I would suggest you work with the appropriate NRCS staff member. Just ask, and it's really helpful. Then you'll get introduced and welcomed. Yes, sir. Ah, that's going to vary a bit by state. Let me give you two contrasts. In Michigan, it's a statewide decision. All our programs are statewide in Michigan related to NRCS programs. There's no variance from region to region. That was a real great benefit for me. So some of the interactions at this state level percolated immediately down to all levels. Another template, which is also appropriate to equip bigger rules and all, is that local working groups could be empowered to make some more finite decisions. Is that consistent?
That happens in California, and we find that a lot of the offices will offer IPM programs. They won't store it. We get a statewide advertisement for applications for IPM programs. The farmer goes in and they'll apply, and he finds out that local group is not offering. And that's a huge problem across the program.
You should find that this year in California. We've been directed 30 times to offer the pest management related stuff.
But the trick in that is if it's not a priority in your county, let's say the big issue in your county is livestock.
Right.
Even if the program is offered and you can apply for it, if you've got a lot of livestock in your county for which there are huge resource concerns, they might not get the money to those first, because anybody left, which is not always the case, and especially not often the case, then even though you're technically eligible for the program, a county that makes a series of decisions that end up with no applications that we
Yeah, that's where that prioritization of the resource concerns is really important. And a little advantage that we had is that prioritization process occurred statewide in Michigan. Well, you could call it advantage. You could call it a disadvantage, though, because it assumes that Michigan is homogenized throughout the state, which I assure you it's not the case. So it works both ways.
Resistance is an inherited trait which allows an individual to survive doses of a toxicant that would prove lethal to a majority of individuals in a normal or susceptible population. And because resistance can evolve in a tractable amount of time and the selective agent can be known, it provides a very unique system in which evolutionary processes can be studied. Currently, there are 125 or more species of mosquitoes that have documented resistance to one or more insecticides. One of these mosquitoes is Culex pipiens quinquefasciatus, the southern house mosquito, which is a vector of many diseases that infect both humans and other animals. It's a target of chemical control campaigns, of which pyrethroids are a major tool. Currently, resistance to permethrin, a type of pyrethroid, has been found worldwide in this mosquito. Permethrin resistance can be conferred by two major mechanisms. The first is P450-mediated detoxification, in which the enzymes, the cytochrome P450 monooxygenases, metabolize insecticides. And more specifically, they detoxify pyrethroids such as permethrin. And these enzymes can be largely inhibited by treatment with piperonyl butoxide, abbreviated here PBO. The second mechanism is target site insensitivity, in which a single point mutation from leucine to phenylalanine at the 1014 site, which is indicated here as KDR, renders the target site, the voltage-sensitive sodium channel, insensitive to these neurotoxic effects of permethrin. And because control failures in the field can lead directly to disease outbreaks, it's important to understand the dynamics of resistance in these populations. One reason for high levels of resistance to be found in the field could be due to the maintenance of multigenic resistance through interactions of these resistance alleles. And the resistant interaction types that can occur are synergistic, in which you get a greater than additive resistance resulting. This is also termed multiplicative. Additive, which is used in this study as a null hypothesis. And then antagonistic, which results in a less than additive resistance level. And some previous research has looked specifically at the interactions of resistance, insecticide resistance allele interactions. One study was conducted on the mosquito Culex pipiens, looking at two resistance mechanisms that confer temophos resistance, which is an organophosphate. And they found when both of these mechanisms were in the heterozygous condition, an additive interaction resulted. Much of the literature on this topic has been done on the housefly, and in fact, two studies have looked specifically at the interaction of P450 detoxification with KDR. And they found that when both of these mechanisms were homozygous, a synergistic interaction resulted. So it was my goal to determine the type of interaction that was going on between P450 detoxification and KDR in mosquitoes. And to address this objective, I used three strains that we currently have in the lab: S-Lab, which is a susceptible strain; J-PAL, which is highly resistant to permethrin due to both mechanisms, P450 detoxification and KDR. And then this third strain, ISO-P450, was created by backcrossing J-PAL into S-Lab through multiple backcross generations, and at each of those generations they were selected, such that the final strain was highly related to S-Lab and permethrin resistant due only to the P450 detoxification mechanism, which is the same one that's found in J-PAL. And then I took these strains that we had and created crosses to get offspring with specific genotype combinations. And unfortunately, with the strains that we had available, we were unable to create one of the genotypes. I then took the offspring or the parental strain of interest, subjected it to a larval bioassay to determine the resistance ratio. And then with this observed resistance ratio, I compared it to the null additive hypothesis. And so when we look at P450 detoxification alone, as a heterozygote, we get resistance ratios that range from 94 to 100 fold, and these are not statistically different. When we look at P450 genotype alone as a homozygous resistant, we get resistance ratio of 1300. And when we take this strain, ISO-P450, which has only the P450 detoxification mechanism, and treat it with PBO, which is going to suppress that mechanism, we find a resistance ratio of 5.4. So while this is not one, it's not being completely inhibited, it's being largely inhibited. And again, by treating these strains with PBO, we can suppress the P450 detoxification mechanism, which allows us to look at the KDR contribution. And so when we do this, we find when KDR is a heterozygote, we get a range of 10 to 48 fold resistance. And one of the possibilities why this is such a large range is due to the incompletely inhibited P450 part of the genotype, where the top two are homozygous resistant and the bottom one is heterozygous. Also of note are the top two are reciprocal crosses of one another, and their resistance ratios differ by twofold. This type of variation, while this is significantly different, this type of variation has been seen in isogenic strains, and KDR has previously been shown in the species to not be sex-linked, so the biological significance of this is unknown. And finally, when we look at KDR genotype as a homozygous resistant individual, we find that the resistance ratio contribution is 70. And so to determine the type of interaction that's going on between these mechanisms, we take, for example, double heterozygotes, and what we expected for the P450 mechanism heterozygote was a resistance ratio between 94 and 100 fold. And what we expected for the KDR heterozygote was 10 to 48 fold. So under the additive hypothesis, we expect to see a resistance ratio of 104 to 148. But what we observe for this genotype is 770. So in this case, we have a synergistic interaction for our observed resistance ratio. When we look at the genotype combination where P450 is homozygous resistant and KDR is heterozygous, under the additive hypothesis, we expect 1310 to 1348 resistance levels. What we observe is two crosses that provide us with 6200 and 9300 resistance levels, And so again, in this case, we have synergism. And then when we look at double-resistant homozygotes for both of the mechanisms, we expect, under the additive hypothesis 1370, we observe a whopping 29,000. And so in this case, there's clear synergism going on. And as previously mentioned, we did not have a strain, nor could we create the genotype through crosses, where P450 was heterozygous and KDR was homozygous resistant. And so in conclusion, with all of the tested genotype combinations that were possible between the P450 detoxification mechanism and the KDR mechanism, we find that in mosquitoes, they're synergistically interacting. And my results do not agree with the single previous study that looked at mosquitoes, but the previous study was looking at temafos resistance mechanisms, and mine were looking at permethrin resistance mechanisms. Interestingly, it does agree with the housefly studies that look specifically at P450 detoxification and KDR, in which when both mechanisms were homozygous in the housefly and the mosquito, a synergistic interaction resulted. So from comparing my results to the literature, we can determine that insecticide and type of resistance mechanism are correlated to the type of interaction that is resulting. But because the literature is not complete, so that I can't compare all of my results to another one with the genotype combinations, some future work is needed. It would be very interesting to determine what the homozygous interaction of the mosquito that's temafos resistant would be. It would also be even more interesting to determine the heterozygotes interacting in the permethrin resistant strain that of the housefly that contains both the P450 detoxification and the KDR mechanism. And finally, to see if the correlation between insecticide and type of resistance mechanism hold true, examining other insect species with the P450 detoxification and KDR mechanisms would be needed. And with that, I would like to thank you for being here. Any questions? So the question is, have I used double-stranded RNA to try to knock down KDR to see if there's a decrease in resistance ratio when that's conducted? No, I have not tried that. And looking at the literature of the mosquitoes and their use of RNAi, it's been unsuccessful. And because these are larval bioassays, it would be difficult to inject them, though I've never tried it, so it could be possible. No, I haven't tried it, but it could be a possibility. Yep.
Okay. Do you know the name or identity of the P450 gene?
The question is, do I know the name or the identification of the P450 gene? Currently, that is unknown. There is some research to try and find out what that is, but we don't know what it is at the moment. The only thing we know is that we can knock the mechanism down by treating with PBO. The question is, do I know how far away the two loci are of the mechanisms?
Could it have linkage or not?
Right, if there's linkage or not. Well, because we don't know what the P450 is, we don't know where it's located. So the answer is no. Thank you.
I'm Ash Foxyal from Washington State University. Today I'm going to talk about lethal and sublethal effects of pyriproxifen on oblique banded leaf roller.